the gospel reading this morning is from the gospel according to Matthew, the second chapter, starting in verse 1 and going through to verse 12. That's Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Now, in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born the king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and we have come to pay him homage." And when King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, as it is written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, so that I may also go and pay him homage.' And when they had heard the king, they went out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. And on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. And then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road." This is holy wisdom, holy word. For a brief but intense period in middle and high school, the thing that I liked to read more than anything else was retellings of fairy tales. The particular pleasure of these novels for me was that I would know the story. I knew going in that I knew the story. It was going to be Cinderella or Rapunzel or Snow White or Sleeping Beauty. But I never knew when the tell would come, when I would read something that showed me what story I was in. And so I would come into the strange world of the book and read, waiting for something that would tip me off as to where I was. There's a great deal of power in how you tell a story. And there are many, many ways to tell the same ones. Our four Gospels, right, are a very clear example. And Paul's repeated explanation, varying very slightly every time, to various officials in different places of how he came to be in that region and preaching, is another example that we find really easily in the Bible. The confessions that make up part of our church constitution or another, these are pieces of our heritage, right? And they're retellings of the same story, the story of what we believe and why, over and over, as different circumstances, different times, and different places demand. The way that a story is told gives it power. And the way a story is told holds clues in it for the reader. The clues tell them what story they're in. There are tells like this in the gospel passage today. The frankincense and myrrh brought from foreign lands to Israel are signposts back to the Isaiah that we heard read. Here, now, again, on Mary and Joseph's front stoop, are they to arise and shine. There in that house, the glory of the Lord is shining, and nations and kings were prophesied, and there they are, right? The Magi crowding into their front room with their lavish gifts. The story they are in is a story of joy and radiance, of return to what should be, a story of restoration brought about by this little child that the Magi went through all that way to see. Now, there could be other tells, right, in the same story. Perhaps this blustering king means actually we're in Esther, with the fate of a people on the line. Or perhaps the appearance of Bethlehem means we're out in the field with David, while Samuel the prophet goes looking for which one of Jesse's sons he needs to be anointing to be the next king of Israel. Or perhaps this conference between the learned counselors of the king and the king himself means we're actually in Egypt, and the double-speaking ruler is looking for any reason not to let God's people be free. Of course, no story is reducible entirely to its echoes, but each echo is another way for the people of every age to enter into the story of what God has done and what God is still doing. We follow a good and a steadfast God who is always doing the same thing in different ways, who is always bringing the old justice springing up in new shapes, who is being the same God to new people, who nevertheless make the old mistakes in new ways all their own. God always comes to God's people. Righteousness is always met with hostility. Those who hold power are always warped by it, and God's promises are always kept. Fear and death come again and again, will come again and again, and yet hope and life always sprout in their ashes. Our world cannot be as good as God made it to be, and yet the love of God continually sustains it every moment of every day. So every tell in a story, every echo of another one, every reminder of what has been offers a flash of insight into where we are now. If I were telling this story, I would tell it like this. I would say, there were astronomers, people who had been studying the sky and history books and old manuals for years and years, trying to understand the world around them. And they were very practiced at taking what information they could get and combing through it for meaning. And one night, searching the sky, they saw something new. And it took them a while to figure out what it was, but they knew that it was important, so the time spent in their libraries with their manuscripts seemed worth it to them. And after a while, they found the confirmation they were looking for. It was important. So they packed up their bags and loaded their camels, and they set off. They were relieved to have each other for company on the way. They were on the road for weeks, for one thing. It would have taken weeks to get where they were going under the best of circumstances, and they weren't actually entirely sure where they were going. And they couldn't really explain to people what their goal was. Well, they could explain what their goal was, but when they did, they got strange looks, or people would just kind of change the subject, or they would talk to them in a different voice that made them feel a little embarrassed, or sometimes people got hostile. But they knew what they were going to find, and it was worth it, so they kept going. And after a time, they arrived in a city. And this seemed to them to be a good place to find what they were looking for. Kings, after all, live in cities, and there was a king in this one. The shopkeepers and the laborers and the weavers and the herders they passed in the streets were willing enough to point them toward the palace, though nobody seemed particularly excited by the thought. And at the palace, the guards were, after some conference, happy enough to open the gates for them, though the astronomers thought that they noticed the guards exchanging looks behind their back. And the king was pleased enough to welcome them into his throne room, and his many counselors and learned men were gracious enough in speech, though the astronomers thought they noticed tension in the king's voice, and the counselors did not seem to want to meet their eyes. "We've come to greet the new king and to pay him homage," the astronomers said. "But there had been no babies born at the palace." "We saw his star," the astronomers explained, undeterred. "We know he's here. We want to see him." So the king summoned everyone learned in the city and demanded to know where this new king was to be born. "It isn't proper," he said, "for a king to be hidden away." And he drummed his fingers on the arms of his throne. "He's in Bethlehem," said one learned person after another. "The city of David, Bethlehem of Judah, by no means last among the rulers of Judah. The new shepherd of our people comes from Bethlehem." Ah, Bethlehem, of course, said the king, himself Jewish, though only by conversion about a generation ago, and pretty anxious, actually, about his bona fides. Of course, Bethlehem, you go, he said to the astronomers, who were waiting patiently. They were accustomed to waiting. You go, and you give this new king your gifts, and then come back here and tell me where I can find him. I want to visit him, too. There was an edge in the king's voice and nervous motion in his knees. And the counselors looked straight ahead. So the astronomers left the palace. They were only a half day's walk from Bethlehem if they hurried. They arrived as the sun was beginning to sink, and the light was turning as gold as the bars in one of their saddlebags, and the first bright stars were winking faintly into view, including their star. Has there been a baby born? They asked the shopkeepers and the laborers and the weavers and the herders. In the last year or two, under strange circumstances? Rumors? There had been lots of babies, of course, but just one born under circumstances strange enough for these dusty strangers to be looking for it. Pointed fingers led them to a tiny house on a narrow street. A young woman was kneading bread while a man was crouching over a small child, with the child's hands holding tight to two of the man's fingers while it took wobbling steps, screeching with glee. As the astronomer's camels blocked the light to the window, the small family looked up. They were taken aback, but not, the astronomers thought, altogether surprised. The astronomers knelt before the little family and opened their chests, and the little room was filled with the glow of gold and perfume and incense and balm. That night, the astronomers slept as best they could on the floor of the little house. They tossed and they turned with ugly, frightening dreams, the king's face red and shouting, and the sounds of men and women wailing and children crying. They woke before dawn, sitting up to face each other in the gray light. We must go another way, said one. We must go another way, said the others, nodding. We must go another way. We have seen the child, and now we must go another way. These are the things. These are the things that I see in this story today, now, at this reading. I see people who are following their best lights, who are following their best lights in the face of confusion and hostility and indifference. And I see a king, anxious, fragile, impulsive, prevaricating, and cruel, with his fingers on his sword, uncertain of his power, but determined to keep it. And I see hope burning brightly in the midst of looming death. And I see those who have seen Christ choosing another way, risking the full wrath of that fragile king to choose another way. Have you seen any tells in this story? Do you know what story we are in? May we, who have seen the Christ, have the courage to choose another way. Amen.